We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
I had a bad habit of missing lovers past. My brother used to call it eating out of the trash. It's never gonna last. I thought my house was haunted. I used to live with ghosts and all the perfect couples said, when you know, you know. And when you don't,
you're listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
He's Will. I'm Jeremy. We're Jeremy and Joe on ESPN 97.5, 97.9 HD2. Let's see. Anything interesting on the text line? Never mind. No more aux for BMAC. So this guy's got issues. One segment he likes you, Brian. The next segment he doesn't. Then he likes you again. Then he doesn't again. It's a very volatile reaction to Brian today. 713-780-ESPN. All right, you want to get to this Texans babying CJ Stroud?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
30 minutes. I'm terrible. I'm the world's worst radio host when it comes to teasing something and then paying it off. But that stuff's overrated anyways. People care about your entertainment prowess. People are yelling at their radio. You're not entertaining either. I am a fan of this Cosell fella. I'm such a fan, I forget his first name. Greg Cosell.
Oh, I know what you're about to go to.
So Greg Cosell, I think he's got stuff with SI. He used to come on with the bench all the time, but I think they stopped being able to afford him. But he would come on with the bench. I love listening to him talk football. He's probably one of my top three football listens. Love listening to him talk football. Number one and two are John and Lance. Number three is Cosell. And then John Harris is a close fourth. But they had Cosell on Texans Radio, and we know Texans Radio, Vandermeer, John Harris, which I think they do a fantastic job. I really do that. I just told you I love listening to John Harris talk football. John Harris talking football is unbelievable. And Vandermeer, one of the best play-by-play guys in the business, and I mean both of those things sincerely. So they had Greg Cosell on when I think they were at the Combine. So they had him on. They had a bunch of guests at the Combine. They were pulling him over, kind of like Radio Row, but at the Combine. They're, hey, what do you think of the Texans? What do you think of this guy? What do you think of that guy? So they're talking to him about CJ Stroud, and here is the answer that Greg Cosell gives.
CJ Stroud, you watched him play in the playoffs, regular season, and you watched him play in college and all throughout his pro career. So your thoughts on where he's at right now, where it's going to go?
He's kind of an enigma wrapped in a riddle to me, you know? I mean, we saw him play as a rookie. I remember it might have been week two in his rookie season. I think they played the Colts, if memory serves me correctly, week two in his rookie season.
Yes, yep.
And just the anticipation throws and the confidence with which he threw, I just sat back and went, wow, this guy has exactly what it takes to be a high-level pocket quarterback, because that's what he is. I mean, he's not a statue, but if he's going to be a great player, it's going to be as a pocket quarterback. I think we'd all agree on that, right?
Yeah.
He's not going to be a playmaker. Correct. He's a pocket quarterback. And over these last 2 years, I mean, I don't know what's in his head. None of us do. But it just seems like he's playing so fast. Like, you know, mentally everything has gotten speeded up, which speeds it then everything up physically. And I don't know what the answer is. He has moments where you look at him because he throws a beautiful ball. I mean, if you're just talking about the way he throws a football, he might be top five in the league.
Greg, in the AFC South, it's changed a little bit.
I think they edited out the rest of his answer.
I think
they flat out deleted the rest of his answer, because you could tell by the tenor that Greg Cosell was talking here that he was like building it up, like, okay, you know, he's been really, really good. He's an enigma wrapped in a riddle, which is a world-class line. An enigma wrapped in a riddle, and he's like, yeah, you know, so he gives like, these are the areas that he's been good, and he was about to crescendo and go into all of the bad, and they flat out wiped it from the internet.
I think it's bad. You can't do that. I think this is one of those situations where It's like D-Row, Mark DeRosa. Bro, just say you're a dumbass, you screwed it up, and then it doesn't give anybody a platform. I can't say, like, hey, this is really bad.
Don't delete it. Don't edit it. And someone from Cosell, he has a great point of view. He doesn't bash to bash. He doesn't rip to rip. He doesn't get personal. It's all football, and it's all pretty knowledgeable. So, therefore, it's all probably stuff that might be true, and CJ's heard. And if he hasn't heard, he should hear from his coaching staff. So, it's bad, and it makes it worse because you delete it.
I think it's so much worse.
It is. Not only is it so much worse, I think I'm almost more offended just by how poorly they edit it than the fact that they edited it.
Like, that's part of it, too. It's like, I'm not, whoa, 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 you think I'm an idiot?
Like, Jeremy, you mentioned, like his tenor, like the cadence, you could tell, like, the thought was to continue. They also left in the breath. Like, if he was done talking, you wouldn't hear the breath there. Like, that's such... I do that stuff. Everyone here at the station does that stuff every single day, like editing out breaths of things like that to make make an ending where there wasn't one, right? Like, that's such an easy fix. The fact that they edited that way, leaving the breath in, and then posted it as if we wouldn't notice is insulting.
And the video aspect of the edit makes it really bad, too. I know we're in the radio medium here, so we kind of have to describe it. But they very clearly have two cameras going, because you see throughout the interview, there's a one-camera shot of all three of them, right? And then they have another shot that's focused only on Cosell. So they immediately, like, this whole, you know, answer that Cosell's giving, they go one camera, and then they immediately, during that breath that Brian's talking about, they immediately go back to the other camera, which has all three of them on the air, which makes it very, very obvious that they deleted who knows how long of Greg Cosell talking about the negative aspects of C.J. Stroud. And to your point, Will, like, C.J. Stroud knows that the negative aspects exist. They exist with everybody. The best – Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback resume of all time. He had weaknesses as a player. Every player has weaknesses as a player. So the fact that they're babying and going as far to cover up guests that they get on their own network to protect the quarterback is some world-class babying that, quite frankly, I don't want an NFL team babying the quarterback that way.
Do you think this has to do more with babying the quarterback or babying the fan base?
I think it's more about babying the quarterback. Like, why? I don't think that they baby the fan base. Sometimes they go at the fan base. Like, they mock their reactions to things sometimes.
Well, I say that because it's like they're protecting the fan base, or they're protecting themselves from the fan base of, like, fanning the flames of all the anti-CJ rhetoric right now. Because I don't know that CJ would even see it. And if he did, again, I don't know that it's anything. Hell, maybe they prevented him from seeing something that could be helpful. Because, right, again, Cosell is a good football mind. This isn't First Take. This isn't Cam Newton's dumbass thoughts or Stephen A. Smith's. Like, this is Cosell, who has measured thoughts and knows the game well.
Right. I think he knows the game really well. Junkie says the way they edited it makes it seem like he said something wildly offensive, and this is the rumor I want to start. Like, I don't, like, that's not Greg Cosell, though. Like, Greg Cosell isn't going to talk out of turn, and he's not going to talk with innuendo and rumor. He's going to talk strictly based on what he sees on the film. Like, he even got into it a little bit there. He's like, I think he's playing fast. I think he's playing fast when he's going well. He's a top five accurate quarterback in the NFL. Rest of his point was coming up about the negatives, and then wham, scrubbed from the internet forever. And Junkie wants us to play it again, and since we're just, you know, puppets for you guys, here it is again, Howard Cosell being edited by Texans Radio on Texans Radio.
C.J. Stroud, you watched him play in the playoffs, regular season, and you watched him play in college and all throughout his pro career. So your thoughts on where he's at right now and where it's going to go?
He's kind of an enigma wrapped in a riddle to me.
I like,
you know,
how they he baits him here, by the way, as a
rookie. I remember it might have been week two in his rookie season. I think they played the Colts, if memory serves me correctly, week two in his rookie season.
Yes. Yep.
And just the anticipation throws and the confidence with which he threw, I just sat back and went, wow, this guy has exactly what it takes to be a high-level pocket quarterback, because that's what he is. I mean, he's not a statue, but if he's going to be a great player, it's going to be as a pocket quarterback. I think we'd all agree on that, right?
Yeah.
He's not going to be a playmaker. Yeah, right. He's a pocket quarterback. And over these last 2 years, I mean, I don't know what's in his head. None of us do. But it just seems like he's playing so fast. Like, you know, mentally everything has gotten speeded up, which speeds it then everything up physically. And I don't know what the answer is. He has moments where you look at him because he throws a beautiful ball. I mean, if you're just talking about the way he throws a football, he might be top five in the league.
Greg, in the AFC South, it's changed a little bit.
They're trying to immure C.J. Stroud with only positive thoughts.
Yeah, it's like, but as we were saying, like they immediately switched to dinner. Like, all right, speaking of, like, wait, what?
It was Brian's right. Like, to me, it was like it was a crime in like the protection of your quarterback. Like, he's so mentally fragile, and it's not that C.J. Stroud is that way. Maybe some people think that he's that way, but it's more like the people that are making the decision think of Stroud that way, like, oh, we can't see this, or we can't have this on our channel. But the other crime is how poorly the edit is. You go from a three-person shot to – or a one-person shot to the three-person shot, and it's so abrupt that it makes it so, so obvious.
And this is another thing. It's like, all right, that's why, you know, I agree with you. Listen to John Harris talk. Football's great. It truly is off camera. I like these shows of the Houston Texans – like, it's propaganda. It's always positive. And this is a prime example of that. It's a really, really tough watch and listen, because you're not saying the truth. You're just saying what you can say.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's – I watch their YouTube videos because I just want to see what they're saying. And, like, they'll have Caserio on, right? Like, they get Caserio on once a week during the season. They get D'Amico on once a week during the season. So I want to hear their viewpoint. But you're right. You have to kind of – you know, filter through a lot of propaganda. And look, I'm not even blaming them for that, right? Like, they're owned by the
McNairs. I don't blame them for it. It just is what it is. And this is an egregious example of that. And,
yes.
And this is why this doesn't help them at all. That it just, it's like, whatever.
You don't edit it out. You don't edit it out. You got to leave it. Like, and you have to, you know, you have to lob softballs, and you're going to frame questions the way that they need to be framed. I do it. But they're signing your paycheck, so you have to. You're their employee, right? Like, you work for them. So I don't blame them for that aspect of it. But the moment that you start changing narratives of guests that you have on your network, that's an issue. That's a problem.
I agree.
713-780-ESPN. Why is everybody so afraid of using the term happy feet? Well, he got into further things. No one's afraid of using the term happy feet, I don't think.
Well, yeah, who – why does that person say that? I don't even know. I think that's the definite – that's what's going on. And I said that's going into last season. I thought his feet going into last season were kind of in hibernation. I don't think it was fixed. I don't think they were quieted. I think they were in hibernation. And the moment that they kind of got woken up, then it's like, oh, damn. Uh-oh. Because the line wasn't good. The line isn't good.
He takes hits. I do think that a lot of his poor footwork, and I agree, he does have happy feet. I don't know what you mean by that texture.
I don't think he has happy feet inherently. I think he has happy feet because of what is in front of him.
Well, I think what I read from that text is it's a C.J. Stroud criticism, which is a fair critique, and I think he's going after the people that critique C.J. Stroud, saying they stop short of calling him happy-footed. We won't stop short of that here. He is happy-footed, and I do think that it has happened because he has taken a lot of hits, which is very difficult to get back, you know? Like, it's very difficult to go from a quarterback who is comfortable in the pocket to a quarterback that is now uncomfortable in the pocket, to then become a quarterback comfortable in the pocket. That's a long leap.
It's like, if you know, two parallels I draw. And this one I made yesterday, I said, if I punch you in the face 10 times and then like that 11th time I cock back and you flinch, it's like, well, yeah, dude, of course I flinched. Like, you just punched me in the face 10 times. I'm not trusting your actions. And then if I cheat, if you like two spouses and one cheats on the other, it takes a long time to earn that trust back. It's not overnight, and that's what's going on with the offensive line. It's what's going on with the play calling. It's what's going on with the scheme. It takes a long time to trust that the guys are going to be in the right spot at the right time and that you're going to have time to even find them. Like, there's multiple levels and moving parts to this. This is not CJ being inherently happy feet because he wasn't that way initially. We are here now for various amounts of reasons.
Yeah, I like that analogy. I think it's a really good way to describe what's going on with Stroud. And I also think it's a very tough thing to overcome. Mm-hmm. Like, if you punch me 10 times in the face, how am I ever going to think that you're not going to punch me in the face?
Yeah.
Like, that's the mental leap that's going to, you know, require for him to get back to being very comfortable in the pocket. And I think that's a greater leap than people are willing to admit.
Extremely, extremely difficult. Because, again, it's not just that. It's like, all right, okay, I'll trust the line. I really, really will. But will the rookie wide receiver be where he's supposed to be? Is this even the right play call? Like, there's there's levels to this offense that it was bad for for multiple reasons.
Yeah. All right, 713-780 ESPN HRP listener line. Bad Take Boulevard when we return. What are the worst takes of the week? Bad Take Boulevard, Will in for Joe. It's Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2. You know, it's a great take, a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. They make the highest quality basketball goals on planet Earth. Don't waste your time in the big box stores. Their goals aren't any good, quite frankly. The rim's going to get jacked up. Backboard might get broken. The wind's going to blow them over. Will just blows on it. That bad boy blows. Right on over. It's on its belly in no time. But Pro Dunk makes the best basketball goals you'll find. They've been serving the best goals since 1984. They've been serving better goals than anybody else since I've been alive. Tempered glass backboard gives it a true authentic feel. It's got a breakaway rim, which is critical because you're going to be throwing down jams. How am I going to do that? I'm 40 years old. I got a 10-inch vertical. I'm out of shape. Well, you can lower it all the way down to 5 feet. But if you are a true athlete, and they've got the 10-foot goals too, you can raise it up to there. Regulation. You can dunk on that bad boy too, but always the breakaway rim. They got the extended overhang so those weak-ankled people don't have to worry about rolling their ankle on the basketball stanchion. That's great to have. Stainless steel hardware that's top shelf, also rust-proof, which is must-have in Houston because of the humidity that we get in our great city. Their accessories, next level. LED light kits for night play. Well, I don't want a goal because I'm always at work. Kids are always at school. We only have time to play at night. Well, LED light kits, problem solved. Backstop net, don't have to chase the basketball around. Pull pad lettering, lots more. You got to check out Thor, too. Whenever you head to the website, produnk.com, check out Thor. They have the lightning adjust feature on their goal, which you can raise and lower the goals with the drill anywhere from 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. Easy to do, fun to do. They have all the goals, though. They have in-ground adjustable, portable, wall mount, roof mount. They can do everything at Pro Dunk, and they can also install the goal for you, too. You're not great with a drill. You're not great with a ladder. You don't want a box delivered to your driveway with a million pieces that you don't want to assemble. You don't have to. The pros at Pro Dunk can do that installation for you. Perfect height, perfectly straight. You're going to be glad that you got that installation done. But order now, produnk.com. That's produnk.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With Jeremy and Joe.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
Will's in for Joe today. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, 97.9 H2. What are the worst takes of the week? 713-780-ESPN. All right, start off with Mark DeRosa, manager. Not sure why he's qualified to be a manager, but manager of the WBC. He had some thoughts ahead of USA's matchup against Italy that has gotten him into some lukewarm water.
Ton of respect for Italy. It's weird. We want to win this game, even though our ticket's punched to the quarterfinals, because Mexico plays Italy actually tomorrow. So this, the way the schedule lines up, this is an important game for us. Nolan McLean will start. He's on the bump and he's good to go. He's an absolute beast, and I expect him to throw the heck out of him.
Yeah, I would say it lined up to be a big game for them, Will.
I'd say so, about the seventh inning.
So do you think he misspoke, or do you think he just didn't know the rules?
He did not misspeak. All of his actions said that he did not know the rules. Everything. Kershaw warming up in the seventh, the lineup being what it was. The biggest one, though, before the game, when he talked, because you have a press conference before the game as well, he said, ha, 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 some of our guys are a little sluggish today. We were up late celebrating the Mexico win. What? All the actions said otherwise. And I'm a big D-Row guy. I think he's a great baseball mind. He's a phenomenal analyst on MLB Central, on MLB Network. I think he is fantastic. He's just not, I don't know that he's not taking this seriously, because I think he is. I think he doesn't know how to lead a clubhouse full of stars like that. And in part, I say that because when he has his press conferences, in particular, when I was there against Mexico, he kind of like your demeanor matters when you're a leader. He leans back in his chair. He lets the players take the lead. He kind of answers haphazardly and kind of like, you know, I'll say a little something, but this isn't my place. It's their place. And I know there's different ways to lead. I know there's different types of managers. But when you talk to Joe Espada, like, he sits up tall. He answers your questions. He owns it. He's a leader. He commands the room. D-Row's just not that kind of guy. And I think this not being completely in it as a leader is what happened going into that Italy game, not knowing what to do.
Yeah, I don't know if – I don't think I disagree with you about the DeRosa part, but I don't know if him not knowing the tiebreaker rules and their clinching scenarios is leadership.
Well, I just think it's not owning your role. Like, you're not owning the moment. You're not owning how important it is to be the manager and what that entails and what you have to be in charge of. It's like in the NFL, it's not just coaching football. You got to know when the bus leaves. You got to like schedule that, when to eat, when to handle like your meetings, your coordinators.
Usually other people do that for you.
Not really, because they look to you like, how do you prefer it? Do you want to meet the media here during your day? Like, they're not going to tell you when you do it. They're going to ask you, like, hey, how do you prefer your day to be laid out in order to, you know, have your day be as successful and as productive as possible?
Some things. There's other things that it's kind of, here you go. You're gonna have your traveling secretary that, you know.
Well, sure, they book the hotels, like blah blah blah. But like, also, if the head coach says, "I don't like staying in this part of town for this part of reason," they're going to take it. And it's just a matter of how hands on you are. Like Matt Rhule was the head coach for the Panthers, and I was there. I talked to people in that building. He changed the carpet because he didn't like it. He changed the pictures because he didn't like it. He put names on parking spots and rewarded parking spots. I mean, he was in social media meetings when they were editing because he wanted to make sure that what they were putting out there was reflective of what he wanted. I mean, he treated it like a college program. Hence, it didn't work out at the NFL level.
Games. I would argue that's probably not the way you should be handling
it. Oh, you should definitely not be. I'm just telling you, it goes from all ends of the spectrum from what I've experienced.
So DeRosa's moment to me was more of a bro moment than like a lack of leadership moment. Not that I disagree, but more of a bro moment where it's like, here's all the stuff you need for the test. It's like, oh, it's all right. I'll just kind of wing it. And you don't really know. You don't educate yourself, which I think is a good example of why he's never going to be a Major League Baseball manager, because this didn't, you know, look great on him. I would also disagree with the Joe Espada, though. Like, I don't look at Joe Espada and think, like, wonderful leader.
Whether you think he is or isn't, the way he approaches the press conference is as if he is the manager. The buck stops with him. He has the answers whether you like them or not. Like, he at least sits up tall and addresses you as if he's the manager. It's like D'Amico. D'Amico does that. Frank Ross comes in and does that with the Texans. It's not standoffish. It's not timid. It's very forward, chest open. Like, I've got some answers. You can critique them all you want, so be it.
But I just think it's a little overrated. I just think it's overrated. Like, you know, Belichick.
I don't think it is.
Belichick was always shoulders slumped down, kind of whatever. You know, Nick Saban had some authority. I don't want to go there. But Belichick would be the example I point to, where it's kind of like whatever.
But Belichick didn't give that moment any credence whatsoever because he was so focused on football. And I know that's kind of like an excuse making just for Belichick, but the way he approached it was different. And again, I think
press conferences are highly useless, quite frankly.
I think it's a
terrible way to get a tell on a man.
I don't disagree. However, when it is this type of moment and you are like, you've got to own it, it's 5-6 games, it's 2 weeks, it's the biggest stage for the game in the moment. You've got to be present if you're the manager. Yeah. Here's the thing.
But his mistake was he didn't know the procedure. He mismanaged a press conference.
My vision of what I kind of was kind of weird to me is now being paired with a very strong indicator that I at least am in the ballpark. Whether it's causation or correlation, we can parse that through. But you can't not know and be lackadaisical. You can't be both. You at least got – let's say, Jeremy, you know this as a play-by-play guy. If you're going to say a name wrong, say it with your chest, bro. Like, say it strongly wrong, because then people will at least believe you.
Yeah, you have to have conviction, for sure.
Yeah, you can't like, Manuel Sharpay?
Jazz Chisholm makes the list. He said before the WBC.
You just made the list!
He's playing for Great Britain. He said, we're planning on shocking the world. I think they were 2 in Q. I think they were one of the first teams eliminated. So Jazz makes the list. This Ravens fan, did you hear about this Ravens fan who said that he'd shave his head if the Ravens traded for Max Crosby? So they traded for Max Crosby and he shaved his head. And then the Ravens said no on the trade. So this bald-headed Ravens fan, wait for the trade's official. Wait till it hits the wire. You make the list.
You just made the list.
Thinking the trade was official when the trade was not official.
Or don't shave your head for something that means nothing to you.
Yeah, it's pretty stupid. That's also stupid. Dan Orlovsky, a Tua guy, he said the Dolphins won't regret paying Tua. You're not going to find five guys in the NFL that can run Miami's offense the way that Tua does. You need a Steve Nash, Chris Paul type of point guard, and that's exactly what Tua is.
Hold on.
Orlovsky makes the list there.
You just made the list.
Hold on. What? Hold on. Start over. Say that one more time.
Sheesh.
I'm sorry.
I didn't know I was going to work extra if I had to work.
Is this a speak and say?
Do it again. I dare you.
You're not going to pay to find five guys in the NFL that can run Miami's offense the way that Tua does. You need a Steve Nash, Chris Paul type of point guard. And that's exactly what Tua is.
Here's the problem. It's not the same offense. It's the McDaniel's gone.
No, this was in the past. He didn't say this like yesterday.
Yeah. Oh. He said when he signed the extension. When they signed Tua to the extension.
Sorry.
He said you're not going to regret the Tua money. Because he's going to be really good in this.
Yeah, I
system.
Never thought that was because of Tua. I thought Tua didn't look as bad as he was because the offense was actually
Tyreek bailed
a lot
him out.
Of
yeah.
And like,
he could just throw the ball to an area.
I'm not saying Tua was bad when he was fine, but it's like Brock Purdy. It's more system than
is anybody bad when they're fine?
It's the problem. The good is the blip. The good is the outlier.
I think Tua is also derailed by injury. We probably don't put enough credence in that. Like, yes, the concussion, but also the hip. Like, that matters. I think that impacted him, and then things started to
all
fade there.
Of course. But whatever the reason is, the product was not sufficient.
No, for sure not. Trent Dilfer, also a Tua fan. He, Tua, throws better than Aaron Rodgers and Dan Marino. Whoever gets him wins the draft because you're getting a Hall of Fame player.
Just made the list!
That's a crazy thing to say.
I don't know how you could ever look at Tua's arm and be like, yeah, that's Aaron Rodgers and Dan Marino.
Exactly.
Tua at his best was obviously very good, but it was more about like precision and like football IQ and having like clutch moments and maybe having a little mobility. But you never ever, even in college, looked at Tua's arm and you're like, oh my goodness, this is a once in a generation arm.
Mike
ever.
Vick had more of that arm from the left
side. Oh, for sure. That's such a bad take. That's from a quarterback too.
You know, That's another reason. It's kind of like that Texans conversation we were having. When you listen to their HoustonTexans.com, you're going to get propaganda. This is what happens when you're in bed with these quarterbacks, proverbially speaking, of course.
Probably.
And you run these quarterback camps. It's like, oh, yeah, like you're going to carry water for them. And that's such a crazy, stupid take. And I hate saying that as a guy that played high school quarterback to a guy that played in the NFL and won a Super Bowl.
Matter.
But it's like, bro, like, what are you talking about? That's just
a good point
to say.
You could probably find a connection there. I think it's a really good point. Speaking of Baltimore, there was a Baltimore Ravens fan that told me on Twitter that Linderbaum was not going to leave Baltimore.
Yeah,
you made the list.
You just made the list.
You see Tom Brady pinned a tribute letter to Tim McCarver, who he thought died last week, but actually died in 2023.
Shut up. What?
Yeah, this is legit.
How?
He pinned a letter. He thought he'd passed away. He like wrote a letter on like his website or whatever. And he's like, Tim McCarver had the same, job that I did, but only for baseball. And then he blamed it on a proofread error.
What do you mean a proofread? Like he
said it was a proofread error. Like if you're going to blame it on something, you would blame it on a typo, not a proofread error.
Well,
so it sounds to me like he's throwing his editor
under
the bus.
Letter is a typo.
I think he's throwing his editor under the bus actually. Because like, okay, maybe the proofreader missed it, but you also typed it, dude. Like, sounds like a typo. Like, even if it was a typo, right? Like even if it was a typo, it's still your mistake.
Yeah, the proofreader doesn't proofread your thoughts. Right? Like, you still have the thought that, hey, Tim McCarver died this week. I should say something about him.
This is so weird.
Like, he'll fix your grammar. Maybe punctuation. Yeah. He's
like,
not going to fix the
why do we lie about stupid stuff? Just be like, oh, shoot. I thought this, for some reason, this got in my timeline, and I screwed it up. I'm a dumbass.
Right? Just own it.
It's literally over in that moment, and you become more likable, more relatable. Yep. How many times have you gone through your timeline and something got back in there? And you're like, oh my God, did you see this? And that happened like 3 years ago, I think. And I'm just, oh shoot, I'm an idiot. Sorry.
Especially with Twitter's algorithm.
Or it's like, there's a Trump tweet for everything. Like 15 years ago, someone will go back and retweet it. You're like, no, he did not. And you're like, oh, it's from 2012.
Right. Yeah, context matters. Timeline matters. Junkie, Bad Take Boulevard, my new neighbor, thought he could grill under his carport while it was raining and set his house on fire. I hope that's not true.
Yo, wait. Damn.
I hope that's not true, but if it is, that your neighbor makes the list.
You just made the list!
All right, 713-780-ESPN. What's more likely to happen in 2026, Will, Brian, Junkies? What's more likely to happen? Astros go to the ALCS or the Texans go to the AFC Championship? We'll kick it around next. It's Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5 with Will in ESPN 97.9 HD2.
ESPN 97.5.
They say the holy water's watered down, and this town's lost its faith. Our colors will fade eventually, so if our time is running out, day after day, we'll make the mundane a masterpiece.
Oh, now back to the Huntington Bank Studios with Jeremy Branham and Joe George
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Will's in for Joe today. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, 97.9 HD2. So ask the question, going to break. Curious your opinion, 713-780-3776. What is more likely to happen? The 2026 Houston Astros go back to the ALCS or the 2026 Texans go to the AFC Championship? Which side of the aisle do you land, Will?
I think this is extremely easy. I think the Astros are an under 85 win team, and I think the Texans have every chance to get to the AFC Championship game. I just think that the Astros are going to struggle. They lost Framber Valdez. Like, they have a number one, they don't have a two. They have guys that might end up being that, and there's a whole lot of ifs. We went through the lineup yesterday and how many ifs there truly are on this team in a division where I think Seattle definitely got better, and I just don't trust that division is going to be a cakewalk like it has kind of been in the past. And the division for the Texans isn't either, but the Texans are significantly better.
Why do you think the Mariners got better?
Well, now I got to bring everything up. Damn it. Should have been prepared.
Because, I mean, they just kind of re-signed their own guy. Well, they traded for Donovan.
Well, I think
that'd
they're
be their
better.
One big move in the lineup.
I think they're a better team in general. I think they have better pitching.
Their pitching is good.
Yeah. And there's no back end of the bullpen for the Astros right now. Are we, like, we're good on just 10 days for Hader, by the way? I don't think so.
Longer.
Exactly.
I also think there's a re-injury risk there. Usually
100%.
Elbows and shoulders don't just, like, you know, get much better. And he's already had a re-aggravation, right? He's already had a setback. Hopefully he's back in 2 weeks into the season and there's no other issue the rest of the year. That doesn't sound realistic, though, right? That sounds very, mm-hmm. very optimistic. I think your points about the Astros have a lot of ifs is a fair one. Now, they did get, you know, tons of injuries last year and still probably should have been a playoff team. Like, they had so many injuries last year and still won 87 games. You said you think they're going to win fewer than how many?
85 and a half. 85? They're over-under. So, I just going under.
Oh, that's their over-under in Vegas?
Yep. I say 82 wins. 82 wins is my guess.
Yeah, so 82 and 80, basically a 500 club. I think they're better than a 500 club.
But by how much? I mean, even 85 wins isn't exactly
I think they get to 90. I think they get to 90 wins. I think their team's actually better built for the regular season this year than it was last year, honestly. I think last year was more built for the postseason than this year's team.
Oh, I agree with that. Okay, why do you say that?
Well, because of Framber. Like, last year you had a bona fide one, but I think it's more playoff related because the Astros did upgrade the rest of their rotation. Now, does it make me feel great about, like, a deep playoff run? No. Does it make me feel better over a 162-game marathon? Yes. Because I do think that the Astros rotation this year, especially 3-5, maybe 3-6, is way better than the Astros rotation last year.
So you're saying the median got better.
Yeah. And those are all 1/5 or 1/6 of the rotation.
Like, okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Based
Absolutely.
On who? Burrows? Yes.
Well, Burrows, Emi.
Emi,
you know,
I'm not writing that check, dude. And there's no way you can either.
Sure,
maybe,
but I believe
though,
in
but maybe.
Oh, I like his stuff. I mean, I believe in Emi's stuff over, you know, 14 games of Colton Gordon, 14 games of Ryan Gusto.
Do you like his stuff better than Spencer Arrighetti prior to, you know, the injury?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Because I was a big Arrighetti guy going in last year.
But
big. You're
also getting Arrighetti back.
Like, I agree.
That's another part of the 1/6.
I agree, but he never turned it on when he got back. And have we ever seen video from him getting hit in the finger while standing in the outfield?
I have not.
I just don't know that I buy it. It's coming off the heels of the Joe Mixon, and I'm like, I don't know, dude.
Oh, another conspiracy?
Another conspiracy.
Exactly.
Conspiracy cuckoo back at it again.
We got ballpark cams everywhere these days.
That's true, we do.
And Lena Hidalgo all of a sudden couldn't find video? Give me a break.
That took a right turn.
She said that there was video. She said it was just inconclusive.
Yeah, exactly. Baloney.
It could not be overturned.
Oh, that's the video?
Evidence.
That's what happened?
It wasn't clear and conclusive.
Let's not put that out.
No, I think that the Astros back at the – and that's why I think they're better built for 162. I think of all the pitchers who start 162 games this year will be greater than the 162 games started last year by the Astros pitching staff. But I think Alexander was really good.
I know, he's not a guy you want to count on year in, year out.
The summer of joy! He was all right. I mean, he was okay. You know who else had a 366 ERA last year? Framber Valdez.
The fact that he's close. Out there, and I understand the week. I understand why maybe not, but like 200 innings is nothing. That's rarely done.
No, I'm not trying to. I'm not trying to demean that. It is important. It is critical. But I think it's easier to fill innings pitched in the aggregate than it is to fulfill and fill top end stuff, right? Like if he had a 250 ERA last year, okay, more difficult to fill those shoes. He was 13-11 last year with a 366 ERA. Like that's, solid production. It's not top 10 Cy Young production. You're going to have to find 192 innings to fill. Okay. Well, they're going to do that. They're going to fill those innings. The question will be, can they fill 192 innings at a 366 ERA? That's to be determined. I feel a lot better about them filling that than a sub-3 ERA.
Yeah,
They're going to do it in the aggregate, and that's why they added this depth, and that's why they have six starters they think can be in the rotation. Now the Hader injury does it does lessen their bullpen. Like they believe in their arms. A lot of the arms are unproven. So there is a lot of unknown. Unknown doesn't necessarily mean worse though.
No, but. But over time, when you play the if this, then that, if this, and you do it more and more and more up and down the lineup, like no one's getting younger. Altuve was not very good last year. Correa's always hurt. Pena's always hurt. You just play the whole.
That's not fair on Altuve. Altuve had a good positive offensive season.
But he had a point. I believe he was. What did we say?
We had this argument yesterday too.
What was it? Yeah. Point two? No.
You brought up his overall WAR, but
his baseball reference WAR was a half. It was 0.5.
It was 0.5. It was 2.2 offensively. It was negative 2. Whatever defensively, sure. If I remember correctly. But in comparison to the right year prior, he was a plus 4.8, I believe, last year offensively. So I'm not saying he's bad. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying to count on a guy named Jose Altuve in the two hole as a 2.2 ERA offensively is not ERA WAR. That's just it's not the production you need from a team that's going to get 90 wins.
Well, yeah, I mean you're going to have to be deep in the you have to be deep offensively,
and they're
not going to be singly Jose Altuve. I disagree.
They're deep.
We spent the whole offseason talking about an infield surplus. I think they're deep on the infield. I think they're thin in the outfield.
Okay, no, I agree with that, but that lineup is not deep. I mean, we went through deep lineups. You've seen deep lineups. I mean, this lineup, 7 deep.
I mean, your best nine. I mean, if you go your best nine, which again, this is a lot of ifs to your point, and I think that's a fair point. There are a lot of ifs. I think the Astros are going to have to win a lot of the ifs for them to be good. I will concede that because there are a lot of ifs.
They're good. Like they are.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. And I agree with a lot of your it's an aging offensive team. Like Altuve's older, Walker's older, Correa's older. Isak has a hamstring that needed to be surgically repaired that didn't have surgery on it.
That's
I'm missing
four
somebody as well.
Jordan's right
had a bunch of injuries. Well, that's why you don't trade from the infield surplus.
I agree.
A whole other can of worms.
So but I never thought that was inevitable, as people said. I never thought that was because I thought with this team and their aging and the problems that they do have, a surplus is a wonderful thing to have because whether it's load management or there's actually an injury, you want that body. And you need.
I mean,
that
your best nine, and you're not going to run out your best nine over 162 games because you're going to have injuries. You're going to have guys get off their feet, but no one's going to run their best nine over 162 games. It just doesn't happen anymore in baseball. Every manager has 140 unique lineups every single year. But if you just wanted to go your best nine, assuming health, which again is a major assumption, I agree. I mean, you go Pena, Altuve, Yordan, Isak, Correa, Christian Walker, Yiner, Myers, and then a combination of Cam Smith and Zach Cole. That's a pretty deep lineup.
So you got Walker in the seventh spot. Is that, I assume, that's
was,
in order?
I was just going through names. Like, okay. It was kind of a halfway order.
It I was about to say, it started really off, about it. I didn't know if it fell.
Yeah, I tried to go that way. I was trying to think of an order right off the top of my head. I think that's the way up top, and then I kind of got to the middle and got lazy about it.
If but Walker's batting seventh, you're either in a great spot or a horrible spot. I don't know. You know, I don't know what. Was he knocked down,
on which Walker,
or was someone
right?
lifted up?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of. It wasn't an exact batting order, but if those nine are your nine, let's say in a must-win game, that's pretty deep lineup.
Yeah, like I don't disagree. I just one of my concerns that I don't think is talked about enough is if Jose Altuve should even be batting second.
I would not bat him second.
Where would
I bat
you put
him? Third. Third or fifth, something like that. The reason I like him in the three spot is actually because I don't think the three spot's as important as people think. There's not a single spot in the batting order that bats more often with two outs, nobody on, than the three spot. And I think it's a perfect spot to have a guy who doesn't walk a lot and that can get a lot of extra base hits and can also, like, spark an inning.
Where do you put your best hitter?
It depends on who the hitter is, and it also depends on their profile. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what gets lost in the whole sabermetric, you know, world we live in these days. It's like, this is your best player. He's going to bat, you know, lead off for two hole, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but I think it depends on the makeup of the player. Like, in this case, we're talking about the Astros, and in this case, I think their best offensive player when healthy is Yordan Alvarez, right? I look at Yordan Alvarez's makeup as a guy who clears the table, doesn't set the table. And if I have a guy who's clearly a clear-the-table, over-set-the-table kind of guy, then I like him in the cleanup spot, and I like to stack my top three spots in the order with on-base guys. So if it were me filling out the lineup, I would bat Yordan fourth, and then whoever are my top three on-base percentage guys that day are batting 1, 2, 3, which would include Pena, it's going to include Isak, and then that three spot kind of, you know, it's up for interpretation. Maybe it's Altuve, maybe it's Correa. Kind of depends on form at that point. But Yordan would be my cleanup hitter every day he's in the lineup.
Okay. I historically agree with you. I wonder if that's still the thing at this point. Like, it just has changed so much. I had Clint Hurdle on my show kicking it with Kunkel, and like the your leadoff two guy get, I don't know, 50, 75, 100 extra at bats throughout a season.
Oh, that's way too much. It's way too much. It's like 10 spots per spot in the lineup.
Okay.
Yeah, I've studied this actually. I mean, I'm a nerd. You're not wrong. I mean, every spot in the lineup is about 10 at-bats more, right? So leadoffs can get about 10 at-bats more in the two-hole, 10 at-bats more in the three-hole, and then incrementally down. It's roughly. And it depends on the team. It depends on how often you score, et cetera, et cetera. But,
like,
yes.
The Yankees have Aaron Judge batting second for the most part, or third.
Yeah.
A little bit of split, but.
So my counter-argument to that's fact. Like, they're going to bat more. That's a fact. Like, obviously, that's not even worth discussing, right? Because we all know that a two-hole is going to bat more often than a four-hole. The trade-off, though, becomes, would you rather have a guy take fewer at-bats per season, but of those fewer at-bats, there's more runners on more often than the two spot? Mm-hmm. For me, the answer is yes. And, again, it depends on the profile of the hitter. Like, if your guy is very clearly a table clearer, then I want the guy batting fourth. You know, people always say Shohei Ohtani. Well, it's a different type of player profile. Like, I think Ohtani thrives at the top of the order. Judge, it doesn't really matter. He's so stinking good. So it depends on the guy for me. I just don't love Yordan at the top as much as I love him in the middle. Like, I think Yordan Alvarez was put on this earth to do two things, chew bubble gum and drive in runs, and he's all out of bubble gum. So, like, that to me is why I have Yordan fourth. I also realize I'm in the minority here because of the new school analytical sabermetrics type of stuff, which – I know that stuff. I'm aware of that stuff. I'm a baseball nerd. I know all of the analytics and the sabermetrics. And I think most of the time that it is prudent to bat the guy that is your best hitter, you know, lead off or two hole. I don't think that's the case with Yordan just because of his makeup.
I agree with you, actually. I mean, even last year, I always thought Pena should be your leadoff guy. I thought going into last year, Jose, I thought Christian going into the season three. And then Yordan four. I want to see more of Pena. I love his ability on the base pass. Do not like Jose on the base pass. And then just station with Yordan. And by the way, I looked up the difference between first and fourth, and you're 100% right, between 40 and 60 more at-bats.
Okay, yeah. So it's about 10, 12 at-bats, I think, per spot in the order.
You're exactly right. So I just want to let you know.
Yeah, I've spent way too much time researching.
There we go. Jeremy Branham's right.
Lineup construction, like embarrassingly amount of hours that I've spent researching lineup construction. And you know what my answer is at the end of the day, usually? That batting orders are extremely overrated. Extremely overrated. I think. I mean,
you could like colossally screw one up. Like if you put Yordan at like 9, like they definitely aren't. But yeah. Assuming you're in the ballpark.
So the people have done studies on this. Again, embarrassingly amount of information and useless information that I've spent like learning about this. They've run studies on like optimally constructing a lineup and then just pulling names out of a hat and the difference of runs a team would have in a year. It's less than 10 runs a season.
Oh wow!
Like if you go the optimal lineup 1 through 9 every day versus pulling your 9 hitters out of a hat to fill your lineup every day, the difference is less than 10 runs a year.
It's kind of interesting, and it you can definitely make that argument just right away. Say, well, okay, fine. The 6th guy is leading off this inning. He's now the leadoff guy. Is he the leadoff guy? It doesn't matter. Or the next inning, it's the 4 guy leading off the inning. It's never the 1, 2, 3.
Right, which is why I like the 4 spot too, because the first time that the 4 hole is going to bat, he's either batting with a runner on base in the first inning, or he's leading off the 2nd inning, which is important to lead off an inning because you get a runner on base, all that stuff. So, anyways, enough lineup talk. We'll save that for what's wrong with the spot as lineup during the season. 713-780-ESPN. When we come back, though, I'll give you my answer. 2026 Astros go to the ALCS or 2026 Texans. What is more likely, 26 Astros to the ALCS or 26 Texans to the AFC Championship?
Never quit.
With that sort of inspiration, I think the answer might have been tipped. 713-780-3776. We'll fill it in for Joe. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, 97.9 HD2. Enough lineup talk. Enough. You don't want to sit here and talk about what is your 9 every game for 162. We'll save that for the season. But get away from all of that thought. That's why I go out to Two Creeks Crossing Resort, so I can forget all this useless information that I've learned. Two Creeks Crossing Resort is your spot for a great getaway, for a relaxing getaway. Enjoy Mother Nature the way that it was intended to be enjoyed. Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Book that reservation now, twocreekscrossingresort.com. They're working on that the Lazy River coming soon. They're going to have a little water park out there at Two Creeks Crossing Resort too, so you can get out there, take the kiddos. They're going to be out of your hair all day. You're going to enjoy the rest and relaxation. The kids are going to have a great time. It is awesome. Open green spaces, wildlife, some of the best fishing in Texas. Two Creeks are alongside their property. They got a catch and release pond in the middle of their property, too, which is a great way to teach the kiddos how to fish. Hike on their 92 acres of property. Do some kayak and pickleball. They got the pool out there now. They got swampers where you can grab a cold one. And it's only an hour and a half away from Houston. 90 minutes and you're there. You don't have to worry about airplanes and riding in the vehicle all day long. It's an hour and a half and you're there. Glamping, cabins. They got a treehouse. Pull up the RV. They have the perfect stay for everybody. So book that stay now. TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com. That's TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com.
ESPN 97.5.